Some days are terrible, you wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Congratulations on not killing yourselves. You're still here. Welcome to the voices in our heads. Speaking of congratulations on not killing yourself, I'm working on a project and I want to compile, this is a little call to action, okay? I want to compile 1 to 2 sentences from people who listen to this podcast, from Guys We Fucked, you know, whoever you listen to me on, of your trauma, just whatever, like a little blurb of your greatest hits of like, here's the crazy things I've had to deal with. Because I'm putting them together for a project that I'm very excited about. And there's something really potent about, one, hearing other people's stories, because then it's a nice little zoom out, because when we're in our own shit and in our own head, it's the last thing we want to do is zoom out to go, oh, okay, everybody's going through something. So it's a really instant, potent reminder. And I'm not going to give you my email address. But actually, I think I have, you could DM me on Instagram, and I hope you have Instagram. If you're a patron on my Patreon, patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson, you can instant message me or direct message me on there. But DM me on Instagram. I look at all my DMs for better or for worse. And and it could be anonymous. I was assuming you guys want to be anonymous, but if you don't want to, you could say your first name, first initial of your last name. You could say your first and last, you do whatever you want. That's up to you, boo. Your body, your choice, your identity, your branding. Also, if you're in the Los Angeles area on Saturday, May 11th, Corinne Elizabeth Fisher and myself, Christina Marie Hutchinson, are doing a live taping of Guys We Fucked for Netflix's The Joke Fest. They gave us a very big fancy venue, the Regent Theater, and we really want to sell it out. We're a couple weeks away. By a couple, I mean 10 days, and I'm very excited. And we want to sell it out. So make a gal feel good. Invite your friends. Invite a guy you want to fuck. If you're a guy, if you're a straight guy who listens to the show, and you go, hey, you ever listen to this podcast called Guys We Fucked? Or The Voices in Our Heads? That girl's going to go, where can I suck your dick? She just will. How do I know that? Because every male comedian who is single will take photos with Corinne and I to put on their dating app profiles.
Oh, it was my trick for years. I got 6 years worth of pussy out of having pictures of Corinne and Christina.
Shameless. Shameless. I love it. Hey, swimming in puss, I'm not going to do anything with it. So, you know, somebody should. A cool thing that's happened since I got the ketamine infusions, and then just FYI, if you're tuning in and you're new, I've gotten 2 ketamine infusions, which put you in a deep, deep K-hole for about 45 minutes. And then it takes about 45 minutes of you going, where am I? What's happening? I love you. Where's Kevin? You come out of it. But a thing I've been noticing, and I'm attributing some things to the ketamine infusion that I have no fucking idea if that's what's causing it or not. But I've been doing a lot of work on myself for a lot of years. And I'm seeing really potent results lately. So that was the only thing that I'm doing that's new. And the new book that we're going to get into. Oh, buckle up, baby boys, baby girls, baby theys and thems. Because every sentence of this goddamn book punched me in the vagina. Okay? It's about self-sabotage. So if you're a self-sabotager, get ready for some honesty. It might not be comfortable. But I got a Brazilian wax the other day, and my friend Chris, who does the wax, shout out at Heal with Chris on Instagram. She saved my skin. Look at this skin. Look at this. Look, it's gorgeous. It's fucking gorgeous. I've always wanted skin like this. She's incredible, and she's a real one. She posted something on Instagram the other day that said, if you have your period and you have a tampon, and I'll still give you a wax. I'm like, okay. I would not do that. If I were you, I'd be like, ugh, no. If I were you, I wouldn't be waxing because I don't have the stomach for that. Because what if someone has something in their butthole? It's fine. I probably have, and she hasn't said anything. But yeah, I've never had anybody so close up to my holes than her with a bright light too. It's intimate. And it's an exercise in comfortability. But she makes everything so comfortable. I highly recommend if you're in the New York area, Go to At Heel with Chris. Tell him Christina sent you. It's in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. But one thing she said to me was, oh my God. And I think this was before she knew I got the infusion. She was like, you're so much calmer. Wow. And then, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but 2 weeks ago when I was recording Guys Who Fucked, I told Corinne about the that I've been doing infusions. And I talked about it on the podcast. And she was like, I thought you were so, I felt like you were happier. When I walked in the room, I just felt like you were calmer. And I was like, well, fucking nice. Okay. I'll fucking take it. Okay. My friend asked me the other day, if you could teach a masterclass on anything, what would it be? And my immediate answer was crying in public. I'm so good at it. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. And most times, I mean, this is New York City. There's no place to privately cry. So don't try to seek one out because you're not going to find it. It's going to make you more mad. It's going to make you want to cry more. It's going to make you more embarrassed. You're going to bottle it up. You're going to scream at your cat later. Don't do that. Just cry on the streets. Cry in Trader Joe's. Okay. Cry at the bodega. Cry on the subway. We're all emotional. It's a lot. Life is a lot. And it's not that I think my skill comes in that I just have this ability from since I was little of just completely disassociating instantaneously whenever I want to. It's kind of a superpower. It's like when you have a cloak of invisibility, but everyone else goes away. It's pretty sick. So that's what I do. And I cry in public. And God, I've cried in public. So I haven't cried in public in a while because I've been so happy. But if anybody needs tips, basically just black everybody out and just pretend that they don't exist and really fake it till you make it for a little bit. But eventually it's going to work and you're going to go, wow, I'm so comfortable. It's like I'm alone in my childhood bedroom. Oh, my childhood bedroom. That was a bad place or whatever. I don't know what your deal is. My boyfriend said something to me yesterday that I thought was very funny. He said, I was the dramatic one in all of my relationships until I met you. And I said, you know what? You're fucking welcome. You're welcome, sir. Happy to be of service.
Checks out to me.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Oh, boy. I've never had anybody say that to me. It was so funny. I laughed about it for like an hour. It was really good. So touche. Touche. I love that. Oh, I took this online class. So I'm going to shout a lot of people out this episode. At Heel with Chris. Make sure you go get your vagina wax, your butthole wax. Get that face worked on. She, all her clients are men, women, everybody in between. I also want to shout out Tori Dunlap. Her Instagram account is at her first 100K. Her first 100K. She is a multimillionaire. Her business makes a lot of money and she is devoting her life to teaching women about finance and making women feel empowered because historically, you know, there was a time only a couple decades ago that women could not sign their own mortgages. And that was the 70s. Mm-hmm. And that's fucked up. So, you know, there's some history to work through with women and money, I feel like. And she, I love the way she talks about things, but she, her Instagram account has 2 million followers. And she was, I just scrolled past a post where she was like, hey, I'm teaching this class on how to like organically gain a social media following. It was, I think it was like $45. And I was like, fuck yeah, I want to take this webinar. I love a webinar. God, I love education. I wish I loved it when I was actually in school. Bad timing. But I love higher education. And so I took this class last night and she's great. She led it with, and I'll share a couple things that she said. First of all, she doesn't believe in gatekeeping, which I'm like, thanks, bitch. Because you know what? Everybody else does. And it's exhausting. And I do too. Because then everybody else is not telling their secrets. So I'm like, well, I'm going to hold my secrets tight because I'm coming from a lack mentality. Fuck you. But the reality is there's enough success for everybody. And if it doesn't feel that way, that means you got to get the fuck off Instagram for a second. Go outside, go under a tree, sit on against the tree and look up and look at a leaf. Okay. If you find yourself thinking, oh, there's not enough success for me. I'm never going to make, just shut the fuck up and go outside and look at a flower. Okay. I promise you, it's just a nice little reset. All right. But she had a great quote. And the quote was, trying to be everything to everybody means nothing to nobody. And I was like, aces. She was talking about who's your audience? Who are the people you want to connect with? Another great tip she gave. Ugh, she gave so many great tips. Was serve before you sell. So provide some type of value to the audience that you want to connect with before you sell them something, or in my case, I don't really sell anything except memberships to my Patreon, patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. I feel like I've given some value before I begged you to subscribe. But she's like, that's the spine of my entire business. And her business is a multi-million dollar business. This bitch has money, honey, and I want some. And I really like the way she teaches classes. So highly recommend taking classes from her at her first 100K on Instagram. Okay. I'm really trying. It's May and I love a fresh start. And I don't know if we'll go over it in the first chapter of The Mountain Is You, but that is a coping mechanism apparently for self-sabotage, fresh starts. Thinking that you need a fresh start to like be organized. That's me, but whatever. Fuck it. It works. I trick myself. What do you do? But I took my bulletin board out because I was like, this month is fuck shit up May. Okay. It's fuck shit up May for me. All right. And I have a bulletin board of all the projects that I'm working on, which is a lot, but I'm like, if we're organized, the worst teacher I ever had in my life, I fucking hated her. She had a great quote that she was right on. And it was, organization is the key to success. And there's a lot of other keys to success, but organization is one of them. So I was like, you know what? Time to get organized. And so I have a project board with all the things I have to do for each project. And then I got this to-do list. And usually I have fainting goat syndrome where I look at my to-do list and I go, that's a lot of stuff. And then I just take a nap. But not in fuck shit up May. In fuck shit up May, I am forcing myself to power through that and be super fit and healthy and be active and move my body every day. And I want to eat good food and I want to get shit done. Okay. So that's me saying it out loud. So I do it. We'll see. That's another trick I do. I say I'm going to do things and then I get so embarrassed that I do them. So that's good. There is a lot of stuff. There's so much stuff I want to work on, but you know what? I got to pick one at a time. Cause I'm like, well, it's this and this and this and this and this. And I can't just pick one. That's like an issue I have that I'm really trying to tackle. Maybe I need more ketamine infusions. Drugs are always the answer, kids. No, they're not. And my substance, honestly, I don't like my substance use. I don't like how it's going. I'm smoking a lot of cigarettes and I run every day. What? How? I mean, that's a fun triple threat. I don't know what the third thing is.
What's a lot of cigarettes?
Oh, I hate this.
Are you like a pack a day right now?
No. I would say 2 packs a week.
All right.
That's a lot.
And that is a lot, but.
But with cigarette smoking, it only gets worse. Like right. The book, How to Quit or something by Alan Carr. It's Alan Carr smoking book. I remember my friend Dan Soder was talking to me. He read that and I was reading it at the same time. And he had smoked since he was a child, a pack a day. And he was like, one cigarette is too many and 20 cigarettes is never enough. So, and he was like, he was kept repeating this quote from the Alan Carr book. There's never just one cigarette. And I was like, that's right. And then I quit smoking for about a year. And then I broke up with Steven and I was like, I deserve cigarettes. And then from there on out, it just got more and more. So I really want to get that under control. But I'm like, I got to pick one. I can't pick 8 things. That's my problem. So I'm going to focus on The Mountain Is You. We're going to read this book in a little bit and it's going to be uncomfortably honest, or at least for me. I'm going to project a lot during this reading. So just you fucking wait. There was a great thing that I scrolled past on Instagram. Wally, it wasn't great. It was a sad story. But the relationship that I'm about to describe, I'm like, that's really sweet. And I didn't know that was a thing. Wally, an emotional support alligator, has gone missing. His owner says that sucks that Wally's missing, but wow, is that cool? You can have an emotional support alligator. What the fuck? That's so cool. A Pennsylvania man who credits an alligator named Wally for helping relieve his depression. That's so sweet. I love that for both of you. For nearly a decade, says he is searching for the reptile after it went missing during a vacation to the coast of Georgia. I mean, Wally just thought he was probably going home. He's probably like, why am I on a couch and not in a swamp? But I guess I'll comfort this crying man for a little bit. Joy Henney has thousands of social media users following his page devoted to Wally, the cold-blooded companion that he calls his emotional support alligator. Try taking that on a fucking Delta flight and see what happens. Honestly, If he's a certified emotional support alligator, I would want to sit next to Wally on the plane with the alligator because I'd want to pet an alligator. Because how many people have pet an alligator? You know, it's usually not something you should do. But I would assume an emotional support alligator is not going to rip your hand off. Or maybe that's one of its tactics. I would hope not, though. He has posted photos like a dog or hugging it like a teddy bear. Oh, wait. He's posted photos and videos online of people petting the 5.5-foot alligator like a dog or hugging it like a teddy bear. Wally's popularity soared to new heights last year when the gator was denied entry to a Philadelphia Phillies game. I mean, that makes sense that he was denied entry, but God bless you for trying.
Can you imagine?
I love it.
You imagine going to a Philly baseball game
would love
and you
that.
Just have a killing machine alligator. Yeah.
In Philadelphia, if the Phillies lose, they'll go, hey, Wally, sick him. Well, yeah, not yet.
Maybe.
Philly would eat that up. Now Henny said he is distraught after Wally vanished while accompanying him on an April vacation in Brunswick, Georgia, a port city 70 miles south of Savannah. He said he suspects someone stole Wally. Oh, I swear to fuck. If someone stole Wally, we're all going to fucking get you. That's not a threat to your life, but we're going to get the alligator back. And by we, I mean somebody listening to this in that area. Can you start looking for Wally? Because how cool would that be if the Voices in Our Heads podcast helped reunite a man and his emotional support alligator? I just feel like that's a great story. It's a great story. It would be good for the network. You know, good press.
Yeah, good press.
Good press. He suspects we need all the help we can get to bring my baby back. I want you to have your baby back. And he said in a tearful video on TikTok. Oh, he uses TikTok. He's an older guy. Oh, that's cute. Please, we need your help. Yeah. So please, guys, are you near Brunswick, Georgia? Can you look for somebody with an alligator 5.5 feet? Answers to the name Wally, I assume. Or at least that's just what it gets yelled at. And it's just been confused about that the whole time. Who knows? Who knows? I've been watching the news. I've gotten some good stuff and some bad stuff from it. But one thing that I've noticed, I mean, they've been making fun of this in all the late night shows, that I'm like, the news sucks. It fucking sucks. And then you look into it and you're like, three people own all the news. Weren't monopolies supposed to be illegal? You fucks, you dumb fucks, huh? They're not. They're what's for dinner in America. I remember watching so many media outlets go, guys, when Trump does his hush money trial in New York, don't cover it too much because you're giving him free press. He can't campaign. Don't give him the spotlight because then all of his Trumpers are going to go, they're jailing our hero or whatever the fuck. And, you know, and then all the news is now is Trump drove to the courthouse. Trump went through the metal detectors. Trump fell asleep again in court. Trump farted in his sleep while they were trying to get him to talk. Trump did a sickly number two in the bat. It's just like every fucking thing this guy does is being covered. And there was a point where I was flipping through and CNN was on and the reporters were outside the courthouse in one of these little like man-made booths. Like it was the fucking Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. I'm like, this is not what you said to do, you dumb fucks. How can you be a news anchor for one of those networks and just and feel okay about having to regurgitate this shit? I don't blame you, though. You got to get a job. It's a pretty cool job to be on TV and deliver the news. I imagine you probably wanted that since you were a little kid. I'm happy for you.
Pays a lot, too.
And I hope it does pay a lot, but you kind of are a puppet. But that's okay. We're all puppet to someone, but you're a puppet to someone bad. But yeah. Okay, speaking of that, you know what time it is? Do you know what time it is? Oh my God. Buckle up because it's time for some fuckboy theater. You're gonna wanna get a barf bucket for this one because we have three fuckboys that really fucking suck. How can men be this bad, you ask? Well, don't ask me. Ask God who made them because they really suck. Not all men, but the ones who suck, suck real bad. All right, this is a profile of a guy named Calvin. At the time of the screenshot, he was 27. Calvin is on Tinder. Well, at least he was. And, wow, he goes to school in Canada, so you would think he must be a friendly guy. uh-oh, Canada, your own are really wilding out, because this guy, Calvin, his bio, which is the first impression he wants you to have of him, says, basically, if you consider yourself an eight or above, we might match. 9 to 10, talk to you soon. If you're unsure, you're probably not an eight or above, but thanks for looking. Fuck you.
I love it.
Fuck you, Calvin. I mean, I love it too, obviously. It's fucking hilarious.
Guy knows what he wants, an eight or above.
This guy has a very unique name, so I'm not going to say it because I can't. I mean, this is his Hinge profile, okay? And he answered, piece of shit. And he looks like, he looks like you just want to punch him. You want to punch him and you want his glasses to break and you want the shards of glass to get near his eye. Not in his eye, because that's a little cruel. He doesn't deserve that. No one deserves that. But you want to punch him, okay? But don't punch people, because that's not good. So the prompt he chose to answer was, let's debate this topic. And he said the topic he would like to debate with the ladies is, any female born after 1993 can't cook. All they know is McDonald's, charging their phone, twerking, being bisexual, eating hot chips, and lying. Cool, man. Cool. I wish you well. I wish you well on your journey to find love. Boy, some lady's gonna... Oh, you know what I hope? I hope you get into a relationship with someone so self-actualized that she just verbally annihilates you at an Olive Garden. Date two. Okay. All right. Now this is the final fuckboy. Oh, this is a bad one. This is some of these profiles that I read, or the prompts or the messages, some of them are like, you're not a bad person. This guy, maybe he's a bad person. He's a piece of shit named Corey. Okay. All right. Ready? This is a conversation, I think on a dating app, between a lovely woman who's probably wonderful and beautiful and self-actualized and a piece of trash named Corey. Okay. Hold on. Let me get in character. I'm trying to find a cum dumpster. You interested? I don't know whether to laugh or cry at this. Maybe both. Crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji. I mean, I'm not looking for anything serious either, but I do genuinely want to be friends with who I'm sleeping with, though.
So you're looking to joke around 1 minute and catch a load the next? Crying laughing face emoji.
Crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji. So we gonna be a fuckboy today? That's what we doing? This message is no longer available because the account it was sent from has been disabled. And then she responds to that and she goes, crying laughing face emoji, crying laughing face emoji, crying. Oh, it's so we going to be. Okay. It's the same thing. And then again, it gives her a message that says this account is no longer available because the account it was sent from has been disabled. And then she says she keeps trying. I mean, she can't. I don't know why this is kind of talking into the void, but maybe she, I don't know. Good for you, girl. You might as well. You talk to a void, talk to this guy. It's the same fucking thing, huh? How many women have you actually gotten with that? Well, I guess you are only 26. I promise being sweet and nice will get you so much farther. That's such a sweet thing to say to such a piece of shit. God bless you, ma'am. Even if you don't want something serious, being a fuckboy isn't the answer, love. I mean, good for you for saying something sweet like that. But you can't reply to this conversation because this person's dating app profile is no longer available. And scene. Ooh, cum dumpsters. That's a fun thing to be called. You know what else I love being called? A hole. Just a hole.
That was a tough one.
That was tough.
Yeah.
That was tough. The worst men are the worst, man. Ugh, it's just... And I know women can be trash. Oh, boy, do I know it. But not as trash as guys can be. And you know what I was thinking about? I was wondering, I'm like, because, like I said, I've been watching the news a little bit lately. And with the Gaza just being fucking people being obliterated, it's so awful. It's so stressful. It's so disgusting. It's so, bleh, it's gross. My stance is stop fucking killing people and talk. You dumb fucks. Use your words. I know you might be up against some people that don't want to use words. They want to use bombs. Oh, well, try to be a good person even in those circumstances. I dare you. I fucking dare you. But when I was watching something about Gaza, they were saying, you know, this many people have died, like 33,000 people have died so far. It's probably way more than that. And most of them women and children. And that got me thinking, you know, I was reminiscing on the movie Titanic, and they're like, women and children first. You know, it's always women and children. And we seem to mourn the deaths of women and children, like the way that it's presented. Women and children's lives are more valuable because we say, like, you know, we use that as an emphasis. Like, this many people were killed, and most of them were women and children. And I want to throw it to you, Michael. Does that make you feel worthless? Like, your life doesn't matter? Just curious.
That men are...
just kind of disposable. Just throw them in the sea.
No, because it's not disposable. I mean, this is the thing. We're in this new era now about, you know, with constant conversations about, like, what is and what isn't toxic masculinity or whatever.
Right. You're just making up for being a piece of shit.
No, but I think that, like, the idea of toxic masculinity wasn't even a thought when the...
Of course.
In the days of, like... protect the women and children because they can't protect themselves, and the men are fighting age and fighting form.
Right,
that was the thing. It was always just like, well, like
we're
the men,
weak little weak wings. Right, if shit's gonna microphone
exactly.
Help me.
So, like, does it make me feel like a piece of shit? No, okay. I mean, like, I don't know.
I love how I was like, I wonder if men feel less value. Fuck no, it's because they think we're weaklings. Now, look, children can't protect themselves because they don't know about life yet.
Right. Well, right. Children obviously can't.
And women will fuck you up.
Yeah, but I think the thought was at that time, especially, was that, like, you know, women save the women because, like, and also probably, if I'm being honest, save the women because, like, if we all survive this, someone's got to take care of the fucking kids because the men aren't doing it.
Lord knows. Amen, sister.
You know,
a fucking men, sister.
But there is a time in history where obviously, like, the men went off and, like, formed a posse and, like, found the bad guys and strung them up with rope.
Yeah.
You know?
Ooh.
And we just don't live in that type of society anymore. So yeah. I guess the question back to you is, like, is it insulting that women and children go first, or is it a relief?
Well, now that I know that, yes. Although, if I was on the Titanic and they were like, women and children first, I'd be like, all right, see you, boys.
Yes.
See you later.
You'd be like,
fuck
I have
you.
A child.
Yeah. Oh, I would steal a child. well, no. I mean, the guy, the fucking Billy Zane character. Yeah.
I have a child.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So hot. Such a fuck boy.
Great
oh,
performance, by
amazing.
The way. He's very good in
oh,
that movie.
You talk about a punchable character. Woo! Want to punch him. All right. Well, now that I know that, I resent that. However, the children part stands. I mean, it is
yeah, what are kids gonna do?
It is sadder when a kid dies because a kid's heart is pure. Yeah. I know, hashtag not all kids. Some kids are born sociopaths. How do I know that? Because I know a couple people who are teachers and they teach very young children, and some children straight up come out of the womb going, oh, that's a nice dress you're wearing, mommy, and then just, like, pour blood on it. Like, just some kids are psycho. Some kids are just fucking psychotic. It's rare. Most kids are fantastic and great. Speaking of kids, and not super young kids, but college students. I was watching the Young Turks news station. I guess on my Samsung TV, there's, like, live news channel. Like, you can go, there's, like, a TV guide on the Samsung, which I didn't realize because I always use my Apple TV. But my boyfriend had pointed it out, and I was like, oh, cool. There's all these news channels. There's so many ripoffs of Fox News. Like, Steve Bannon has a network. And they always have the blonde lady that's weathered. Oh, her skin is just leathered and weathered. And the lighting was bad. It was such a low budget version of Fox News. At least on Fox News, that lighting is on point. Okay. And they're just spouting these things of, like, well, we have to get back at these people that are trying to steal our freedoms. It's like, okay, all right. But it was interesting. All these stations, these ripoff Fox News stations, and then the Young Turks that I landed on, were covering the protests. And I liked this Young Turk. I didn't catch the name of the woman, the news anchor that I was watching, but she was really opinionated in a great way. I was like, that's kind of nice. And she was very honest about, like, you know, a lot of the viewers will disagree with me on this, but this is what I think. And I'm like, fucking love that for you. I love that for you. But she was going into the history of college students protesting in 1968. She said college students used to protest, like in 1968, against Columbia's study of weapons to use in the Vietnam War. So, I mean, I think it's already an admirable enough cause to just protest war, because war fucking sucks. It's stupid. It's ape-like. It's the lowest common denominator of who we are as a human population. But too many y'all motherfuckers be warring. And, blah, you know, gross. They said in 1968, they barricaded the dean in his office. And back then, at least at Columbia, this one of the days that she's referencing, they did prevent students from going to class. But she said there was videos and claims from students current day in Columbia that they were like, we're not barricading a student's path to class. So we're not doing that. And they showed footage of this student at Columbia that was just, this woman's going to be, I don't know, I think she was in her 20s. She was a grad student in poli sci. She is going to kick ass in Congress one day, I fucking hope. But she was very clear on, this is why we're protesting. Columbia University studies weapons for Israel, and, you know, like chemical warfare and all of these weapons. And they're basically contributing to the mass genocide in Gaza. And she was so, so direct and so poignant and so blunt about what their goal was. And I was like, well, that's nice, because a lot of the news stations were portraying these students as like just fucking just disheveled and not knowing, not having a purpose and not being organized. And I'm sure there's some students that aren't organized, but, you know, I thought that was really nice. They were saying the Columbia administration present day decided not to be transparent with its students about what funds they divest in. So I didn't know this, but universities will divest in hedge funds, and some of those hedge funds will trickle down to companies. And part of what the student body wanted was they didn't want any hedge funds being invested in their tuition dollars to shit that's supporting Israel, who's just bombing the shit out of people in Gaza. So I thought that was really interesting. And the Young Turks are good. I like the program. And then they're talking about Brown University is going to vote on a divestment. So there's like an agreement between the student body and the faculty. And I was like, okay, democracy, let's go. But she said, she was saying to the police that were breaking up, the footage was kind of crazy at Columbia from, I guess, yesterday. She said, don't crack the skulls of American citizens who don't want their money funneled to a country that's murdering Palestinians. That's pretty fucking simple. It's pretty simple. And then they talked about this guy, Ben Gavir. What a piece of trash in the Israeli government. He's an Israeli minister, calls for executing captive Palestinians. And somebody in his cabinet or in his team said, he was quoted as saying, why are there so many arrests? Can't you just kill some to avoid overcrowding?
Yikes.
That is so fucking blatantly disgusting. And I've tried, like, Corinne has that show Without a Country that's a fucking fantastic, unbiased look at the news, and she's covered this. And I've listened to the episode. She does such a good job. So this is not a news podcast. The voice is in her head. If you want a news podcast, obviously don't come here. Go listen to Without a Country with Corinne Fisher. But I've been asking Corinne about this because I know that she really, when she studies something, she fucking knows her shit. And she wants opinions that are opposite of hers to have her views challenged. I love the way Corinne thinks about the news. And I'm like, I think I was from a conversation with her that she was like, there's these really extreme people in Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet that just kill everybody. I don't care. Don't care about the hostages. I don't just fucking kill all the Palestinians because they are equating them with Hamas, which is not, you know, true. So yeah, that's fucking gross. He said applying the death penalty to arrested Palestinians will prevent overcrowding in prisons. That is, so you think of all this, you take a second to just think about what's going on over there and you get pissed. You get pissed.
Right.
So
it's so funny because we're recording. I'm sorry to jump in.
No, it's okay. I'm not usually well versed on this shit, but I just happen to be watching it a lot today.
Ronnie and I literally, we did our intro for Mike Coscarelli Rules like minutes before you came
shout
in
out,
and
listen
talked
to
about all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And we literally, one of the things that we talked about was John Lovitz went on Fox News. the SNL.
You know. Oh, I love him.
Right.
Oh,
but okay. For whatever reason, they just like trotted him out on Fox News to talk about, like, I guess the anti-Semitic sentiment that some Jews are feeling. Okay. And this guy just sounds, I don't know why they went to him. It's so strange because he's the liar.
Yeah, he just talks like this and he's funny.
Oh, that's the ticket. Like, yeah, he's the guy from like A League of Their Own. Like, he's like a fun, funny actor or whatever, but he's not a political analyst.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about this type of stuff where there are people in like Netanyahu's cabinet, and it sounds like it's Netanyahu himself also, who are just like, just fucking kill him. Who cares? They're cockroaches. It doesn't matter. Then you hear Lovitz go on Fox News and just like be like, what's the big deal? What are these kids protesting about? And it's like horrible.
Oh,
that
Jesus.
Right. Like,
well,
Ronnie,
he didn't know. He didn't take a second to look at what was happening.
He didn't think about this shit at all. But yeah, there are people in that cabinet that are just out for blood. Yeah. And they just want to kill everybody.
And we live in a capitalist society. The ultimate form of protesting is controlling where your money goes.
Right.
That's the ultimate, because that's how you get any motherfucker to change. Take the money that you give them away. Oh, people will go. People will completely flip in a day. You don't need a ketamine infusion to change your mind on that. You just need to get money taken away from you. It's crazy. That's very interesting. Like, yeah, not everybody's going to be able to. You should only, if people you follow, artists you admire, whatever the fuck, if they're politically inclined or even if they're not, like, if people want to comment on it, then they probably have something to, they have something to say. You know what I mean? If they don't have anything to say, how about we don't encourage just adding to the void of bullshit?
Well, yeah, that's the wildest thing with that love. Do you want to hear that Lovitz audio?
Yeah.
Ronnie, do you still have it up? Yeah. Can you play it? Uh-huh. Just play like a little bit of it so she can kind of hear it. But
I love his voice.
It's the ultimate, like, why is this guy talking about this?
Yeah, he's.
It doesn't, like, I get it. And I think that, like, the delicate thing with all this stuff is kind of just, like, making sure that people are understanding that, like, I think a lot of us are opposed to what's going on because it feels, you know, it's heartless and it feels like almost a genocide at this point.
Yeah.
And it's not from a place of anti-Semitism. It's not like Jews should, it's just like, can you just stop killing all of these fucking people?
Yeah.
My mic was going out, but do you have it, Ronnie? There you go.
Father, the Jews in Germany were German first and they couldn't believe this was happening and they didn't believe it. And there's a book called Night that Elie Wiesel wrote about the Holocaust.
Which we all
and,
read.
Oh, yeah.
He was 15 years old.
Gripping.
And he said there was a guy in his little village who was something wrong with him, but he was the village idiot and just would say crazy stuff and nobody would listen to him. And one day the guy disappeared for 4 days and then he popped back up and he said his hair was wild and he was screaming. He goes, they're putting all the Jews on trains and taking them and killing them, and nobody believed him because he was the village idiot. And you hear this growing up, and I it's happening again.
You do?
And I still think a lot of Jewish people are in disbelief. And they go, you're a Jewish American. I go, no, I'm an American, and I happen to be, my religion's Jewish, and I happen to be a comedian, but I'm an American citizen, and I don't know how this can't be upsetting to everybody. And I also, I don't understand it because Israel is a democracy like we are, and Israel is our ally.
Right. So that's the thing. He's just like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, and it's like he shouldn't get any slack for that.
So
he didn't
strange.
Fucking, he didn't, I mean, he's going on Fox News, so I'm assuming he's going to assume they're going to ask him about some political stuff. But
no, he went on to talk about this specifically. It's just, it's a very odd thing.
That's a weird,
it's
not
like what you did with, what you do with Jimmy, where it's like a,
we don't talk about anything opinion wise.
This is Jesse Waters' show. He went on and like, for whatever reason, they're like, book John Lovitz. He wants to come on and talk about Israel. And it's just this like weird thing where you're just kind of like, huh? What?
That should have been the red flag.
Yeah,
but
it's,
you know,
so strange.
Clicks and views, baby. Clicks and views. I was thinking about this, like, I have a lot of Arab friends and I have a lot of Jewish friends, and I've been really lucky to, ever since I was 19, when I moved to New York City, I got a lot of Jewish friends. I didn't really have any Jewish friends until I moved to New York, which is a lot of people's experience. But I'm like, oh, I went to my friend's Seder dinner and I was like, this is so beautiful. Like, what a beautiful religion, like the way that they mourn death and the way that it's community-based. And then my Arab friends, they're like, and they're so similar.
It's so similar.
They're so hospitable. They'll take you in as their own. They got you. They'll feed you. They'll give you a blanket. Like, the way that you get taken care of when you walk into an Arab household or a Jewish household is is, oh my God, it's nothing like I've ever experienced in my childhood. That's for damn sure. But, and I was just pondering that the other day. I'm like, there are so many similarities, and I always watch out for, because once you start zooming out and like taking in people's commentary on history and how it repeats itself, the us versus them, the us versus them thing that just gets shoved into our buttholes unwillingly is crazy. Even with like the DARE program, when Reagan was talking about drugs and how they're the enemy, and it's like, what? No, they're fucking not. You just want to arrest certain people and you're telling us that drugs are the problem when it's fucking you, boo. You suck. Ronald Reagan, another fuck boy. Fuck you. But yeah, I was thinking about that and how the cultures are so, I've felt so similarly warm from both cultures in a way that I've not, I mean, fuck, I never got that from white people. And it's really beautiful. And I always kind of noted that. And then when this thing started happening, I'm like, at first it was too stressful. I don't want to watch videos of children getting maimed. I can't do that today. Can't do it. And that's okay. You don't have to take in everything. But now I could take a step back and I've got my ketamine infusions and I can handle life better. I've been educating myself a little bit and woof, it is brutal. And again, my stance is no one should be dying. No one should die. I think that would be great. I think that would be so sick. And Arabs are such a hospitable, it's such a hospitable feeling when you walk into an Arab house. And then when you walk into it, you're just taken care of. And you're like, it's so warm. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. And I feel like that's just so easy to forget with the us versus them. So remember, just if you catch yourself thinking or talking out loud of this in this us versus them mentality about anything, just know that's poison and stop that shit right now. Okay. Okay. All right. We're going to get into this fucking book. I mean, come on. Self-sabotage. Okay. The Mountain is You, Transforming Self-Sabotage into Self-Mastery. One of the issues that I'm trying to work on, again, I'm working on too many things at once and I'm in Fuck Shit Up May. I'm really trying to just say one small thing a day. This is because Brianna Weiss said this in the book. One small change a day adds up to a really big change a year from now. And she's right. She's fucking right. She's written many books and I cannot recommend this book enough. I will be reading sections from chapter one. The rest of the chapter one reading, if you're interested, is up on my Patreon, patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. There's a $5 level called Just Here to Listen. And you can hear me read the rest of this chapter. It's not too long, but I don't want to spend too much time reading it on here with my hilarious commentary. Okay, so this is from chapter one called The Mountain is You. All right, so this section is Self-Sabotage is a Coping Mechanism. Just hit me where it hurts, Brianna. Self-sabotage is what happens when we refuse to consciously meet our innermost needs, often because we do not believe we are capable of handling them. Sometimes we sabotage our relationships because what we really want is to find ourselves. Fuck you, dude. That's so true. I hate it. Though we are afraid to be alone. That's a lot of people. Sometimes we sabotage our professional success because what we really want is to create art. Oh, that's not me. Even if it will make us seem less ambitious by society's measures. Fuck that shit. Sometimes we sabotage our healing journey by psychoanalyzing our feelings because doing so ensures we avoid actually experiencing them. Ouch, bitch. Sometimes we sabotage our self-talk because if we believed in ourselves, we'd feel free to get back out into the world and take risks, and that would leave us vulnerable. In the end, self-sabotage is very often just a maladaptive coping mechanism, a way we give ourselves what we need without actually having to address what the need is. Oh, I want to puke in a bucket. But like any coping mechanism, it is just that, a way to cope. It's not an answer. It's not a solution. And it does not ever truly solve the problem. You're telling me, okay? We are merely numbing our desires and giving ourselves a little taste of temporary relief. Self-sabotage comes from unconscious negative associations. This I thought was very interesting. Self-sabotage is also one of the first signs that your inner narrative is outdated, limiting, or simply incorrect. Your life is defined not only by what you think about your life, but also what you think about yourself. Your self-concept is an idea that you have spent your life building. It was created by piecing together inputs and influences from those around you. What your parents believed, what your peers thought, what became self-evident through personal experience, and so on. Your self-image is difficult to adjust because your brain's confirmation bias works to affirm your pre-existing beliefs about yourself. So if you say, oh, I'm a lazy piece of shit, and that's an agreement you made with yourself, you're going to look back in your day and go, oh, I was lazy there. And you're just looking for reasons to back up what your brain thinks. And guess what? Your brain's fucking wrong. Because not all voices in our heads are correct. In fact, most of them are wrong. Isn't that fun? They didn't teach you that in kindergarten. When we self-sabotage, it is often because we have a negative association between achieving the goal we aspire to and being the kind of person who has or does that thing. If your issue is that you want to be financially stable, and this is my fuck, I have this, the issues I have with money, I don't even fucking know. I'll watch myself be so bad with money, and the shit she says about money in particular, oh, it makes me want to throw up and shit at the same time. But I'm not on vacation, so I won't do that. If your issue is that you want to be financially stable and yet you keep ruining every effort you make to get there, you have to go back to your first concept of money. How did your parents manage their finances? More importantly, what did they tell you about people who had it and people who didn't? It meaning money. Many people who struggle financially will justify their place in life by disavowing money as a whole. They will say that all rich people are terrible. I didn't get any of that. I mean, growing up, everyone was like, money, we want it. I don't remember it being a bad thing. If you grew up with people who told you your entire life that people who have money are this way, guess what you're going to resist having? Money. Your anxiety around the issue that you're self-sabotaging is usually a reflection of your limiting belief. Maybe you associate being healthy with being vulnerable because you had a parent who was perfectly healthy when they suddenly fell ill. That makes sense. I never thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense. Maybe you aren't writing your magnum opus because you don't really want to be a writer. You just want to be seen as successful because that will get you praise, which is typically what people revert to when they want acceptance but haven't gotten it. Know a lot of those. Maybe you keep eating the wrong foods because they soothe you, but you haven't stopped to ask what they have to keep soothing you from. Maybe that's not a question I want to ask myself right now, Brianna. Maybe you aren't really a pessimist, but don't know how to connect with people in your life other than by complaining to them. In order to reconcile this, you have to begin to challenge these pre-existing ideas and then adopt new ones. And that's the work, because guess what? We can learn all this stuff about why we act the way we act and why are people this way and how did I get this way and what's the brain and the nervous system. But guess what? None of that shit matters if you don't fix it. You gotta fix it. You gotta fucking fix it. That's the rub. Nothing means shit if you don't fix it. Okay? You have to be able to recognize that everybody with money is that not everybody with money is corrupt, not by a long shot. Even more importantly, given that there are people who use their money in selfish ways, it is even more important that good people with great intentions are fearless in pursuit of acquiring this essential tool to create more time, opportunity, and wellness for themselves and others. Now, I gotta say, I didn't grow up with parents that were like, people have money are bad. Like, I didn't get any of that. However, when I read that sentence, I'm gonna read it again for the people in the fucking back, okay? It is even more important that good people with great intentions are fearless in pursuit of acquiring this essential tool, meaning money, to create more time, opportunity, and wellness for themselves and others. I'm like, well, shit, when you put it that way, I never thought of getting money as that, but that is a really great benefit to getting money. And so I'm like, oh, fuck, I do think having money is selfish. I don't know where I got that from. You have to recognize that being healthy makes you less vulnerable, not more, and that criticism comes with creating anything for the public and isn't a reason not to do it, okay? So, Mikey, they could tell you, don't take that Gaza all you want, but that's just a side effect of doing shit in the public, okay? You have to show yourself that there are many different ways to self-soothe that are more effective than unhealthy food choices and that there are far better ways to connect with others than through negativity. Okay. Well, a couple of people I used to date should listen to that 8 more times. Once you begin to really question and observe these pre-existing beliefs, that's key. You begin to see how warped and illogical they were all along. Not to mention distinctly holding you back from your ultimate personal potential. And then, oh, this fucking section. Human beings experience a natural resistance to the unknown because it is essentially the ultimate loss of control. And you know what your girl loves? Control. I love it. Oh, I fucking eat it for breakfast. But it's not good because there's only a certain amount of things you can control. And other things you can't, you just gotta let that go because that's a waste of energy. This is true even for what's unknown, even if what's unknown is benevolent or even beneficial to us. Self-sabotage is very often the simple product of unfamiliarity. And it is because anything that is foreign, no matter how good, will also be uncomfortable until it is also familiar. That makes all the fucking sense in the world. You don't have to have fucked up parents to self-sabotage. Woohoo! This often leads people to confuse the discomfort of the unknown with being wrong or bad or ominous. However, it is simply a matter of psychological adjustments. Gay Hendrix, fantastic author, calls this your upper limit or your tolerance for happiness. I fucking love this concept. Everyone, listen up, kids. Everyone has a capacity for which they allow themselves to feel good. This is similar to what other psychologists refer to as a person's baseline or their set predisposition that they eventually revert back to, even if certain events or circumstances shift temporarily. Small shifts compounded over time can result in permanent baseline adjustments. However, they often don't stick because we come up on our upper limit. So if you grew up only being a certain amount of happy for whatever reason, and it doesn't matter if you're fucked up in the head or not, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, it doesn't matter. Whatever level of happiness that you felt comfortable with as a kid, that is likely the level of happiness you're comfortable with as an adult, unless you've done this crazy amount of work on yourself, which God bless you. You know, we need more of that. But so a lot of times, and I'm like, fuck, I never thought of that. Cause like, who doesn't want to be happier? Of course I want to be happier. But guess what? Self-sabotage is a battle between your conscious thoughts and your fucking subconscious thoughts. And those are tricky to get to, motherfucker. You got to excavate. That's why I get annoyed when people give trigger warnings a lot, because I'm like, getting triggered is not a bad thing. It's a good thing because it shows you where you need to look at. Everyone's going to get triggered from different shit. You could get triggered from my shirt. It says Slut Island. Maybe you got called a slut in middle school and it really ruined your time. And then you see that I have a shirt that says Slut Island. It's a fantastic shirt. I love it so much. My favorite fucking shirt. And you go, oh, that cunt. You know what I mean? Like, and you're not being a dick. You're just, your body's having a body memory of a time that you were really hurt and you didn't deal with the emotions. Because maybe you were a fucking kid and you didn't know how. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Okay. And then this section. This is the last section I'm going to read. But Jesus Christ, this is the one that, how to get out of denial. Maybe this preliminary information about self-sabotage resonates a bit, or maybe it resonates a lot. Yeah, Brianna, I would say the latter. Either way, if you are here because you truly want to change your life, you are going to have to stop being in denial about your personal state of affairs. But I love denial. You are going to have to get real with yourself. This is one of the many reasons why I love this book. She basically is like, just shut the fuck up and deal with it and get through it. You don't hear that enough. The coddling, there's not a, you know, look, I coddle myself. That's my biggest downfall. I coddle myself like a little baby on a cold winter's night in front of a fire. Just wrap you in blankets and give you a warm bath and give you hot chocolate. Even though you're a baby, I'm gonna give you hot chocolate. Can you give a baby hot chocolate? No idea. Probably not. You are gonna have to get real with yourself. You are going to have to decide that you love yourself too much to stop settling for less than what you really deserve. Mm. If you think that you could be doing better in life, you might be right. That's the thing. And I love that because here's my train of thought. When I go, oh, fuck, am I fucking up? I immediately come in and coddle myself and go, no, girl, you're not fucking up. You're great. Everything's great. Just sit for still real quick and think of just having a lot of money and then you're going to make a lot of money. So you could go get that massage. Mm-mm. No, you can't. No, you fucking can't. If you think that there is more that you are here to accomplish, you might be right. If you think that you are not being your authentic self, you might be right. It does not serve us to use endless affirmations to placate our true feelings about where we are on our journey. This just feels so personal. It's not, but it feels it. When we do this, we start disassociating, real good at that, and get stuck. In an effort to love ourselves, we try to validate everything about who we are. just pour lava through my veins, Brianna. Yet those warm sentiments never quite seem to stick, only ever temporarily numbing the discomfort. Why don't they work? Because deep down, we know we are not quite being who we want to be. And until we accept this, we are never going to find peace. Ugh. When we are in denial, we tend to get into blame mode. We look for anyone or anything to explain why we are the way we are. I mean, how many times have I said, it's because my parents. It's not their fucking fault. Because I got to fix it. I know, Brianna, I'm trying. It's fuck shit up, man. I'm going to try extra hard this month. Then we start justifying. If you have to constantly, on a nearly daily basis, rationalize why you're unhappy about your life, you are not doing yourself any favors. You are not getting any closer to creating the lasting change you so deeply desire. Mm. The first step in healing anything is taking full accountability. It's so scary, though. It is no longer being in denial about the honest truth of your life and yourself. It does not matter what your life looks like on the outside. It is how you feel about yourself on the inside. And that's why I wanted to talk about smoke. I don't talk about smoking cigarettes because I'm embarrassed that I do it. And I'm like, you know what? Shine a light on that dark corner. Because then that's how we figure out a way out of the sewer. Maybe. We'll see. Fingers crossed. It is not okay to be constantly stressed, panicked, and unhappy. That is so true. Let me say that again. It is not okay to be constantly stressed, panicked, and unhappy. Christina, something is wrong. And the longer you try to love yourself out of realizing this, the longer you are going to suffer. I'm laughing because I'm so uncomfortable because it's exactly what I need to hear. The greatest act of self-love is to no longer accept a life you are unhappy with. It is to be able to state the problem plainly and in a straightforward manner. I did the first part. I got to do the second part. That is precisely what you need to do to continue to truly uproot your life and transform it. It is the first step towards real change. Take a piece of paper and a pen and write down everything that you aren't happy with. And you know what? When I first read that, I was like, that's so funny. I have all these journals, but I'll go to write like a word vomit of like, if I'm stressed out, sometimes I'm like, go journal and just get it off of your mind, you know, and onto the sheet of paper, you feel a little lighter. And then every time I go to journal about like my money situation, I'm like, I have $8 million. I just fucking write manifestation sentences. And I'm like, bitch, this doesn't work. You got to pick a new tactic. And so I did this. I took a pause. And I wrote down all the things and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things. And we got to start with one, but I don't like a list of a lot of things because that's confusing. Write down very specifically every single problem you face. That's a fun day, huh? If you are struggling with finances, you need to have a very clear picture of what's wrong. Okay, so one of the things that I love giving myself homework assignments. I gave myself a homework assignment for Fuck Shit Up May, where every day I have to write down at least one of my monthly expenses because I have a very accurate feeling that my overhead, the amount of money I spend and the amount of money I earn, there's a huge discrepancy there. And it's not in the good way, it's in the bad way. And I'm spending too much money and I'm blaming it on me wiring hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash over to my parents and then getting hit with a tax bill that I couldn't pay. But, and yeah, sure, that's part of it, but it's not, that's not. That's not really the root of what's happening, okay? I'd be blaming, but not Fuck Shit Up May. I'm gonna take personal responsibility and I'm gonna cry about it in public, but that's okay. Write down every debt, every bill, every asset, and every bit of income. I'm gonna do that this month. It's gonna make me cry, but it's okay. You gotta look at it. I don't know why I'm so scared. You just gotta fucking look at it. You're in a prison cell. The door is wide open, Christina. Just walk out of it, you know? If you are struggling with self-image, write down exactly what you dislike about yourself. If it is anxiety, write down everything that bothers or upsets you. It's so good to write this shit down, guys, because then you see it. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you to send me one or two sentences about your trauma, just because there's two different kind of vibes for that. But like, just when you see things back to back, you get a clear picture of it. So like, If you want to change your diet, one of the best ways I've heard is like I was eating a lot of sugar not that long ago. And I was like, I'm going to write down everything I eat just to see. And I'm like, oh, that bitch, that's not good. You're going to get diabetes. Stop drinking a large chai latte every morning and a croissant. It's delicious as hell, but it costs a lot of money and it's a lot of sugar and it's making you feel tired throughout the day. And that's not what you want. You want to be the best version of you you can be. Okay? And I want that for all of you. You must first and foremost get out of denial and into clarity about what's really wrong. At this point, you have a choice. You can make peace or you can commit to changing. The lingering is what is keeping you stuck. Okay? Okay, guys? Wow. Just under an hour. All right. And I'm going to, the rest of this chapter, oh, it's so good, is up available on my Patreon for $5 a month. Just here to listen. Patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. And yeah, DM me on Instagram at Christina Hutch. If you don't know by now, it's K-R-Y-S-T-Y-N-A. I didn't pick it. Please know I did not pick that. I wouldn't pick my own name. That's not how it works. I mean, I wish you could. I kind of like mine. But yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you for allowing me to be the voice in your head. And we'll catch you next Monday.